our admin here. Esther, you want to roll, get us rolling?
You're going.
Don't forget, oh, we didn't sign that one already, did we? BK1, the one we held over?
Yeah, I'll just get rid of it.
Oops.
Well, we may end up back there, but just so you pull that out.
All right. This is Julie Fedorchek. We're back on live at the Public Service Commission. It's 20 to 12, and we're gathered for the admin portion of our regularly scheduled meeting. I'll call the admin meeting to order. Okay, so we have two items on consent, but I have three items on consent. I move passage of those items.
Second.
No, you only have two.
I only have two.
Why do I have three motions?
That may be a motion for a B.
Oh, I see. Sorry, two items.
Do we have a second?
Yep, I second.
So just to be clear before we vote on something, we're talking about two of them, and they both are the Wagner.
They're, yes, A1 okay. And A2. Yes, and they're listed in our...
All right. We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion is approved.
Okay. We have actually now three items in discussion and a couple additional ones on scheduling, but we'll start with number one, treatment of archaeological and historical information. Brian
Culp. Yeah. I just wanted to close the loop with the three of us that during, one of our work sessions, it came out that the SHPO have talked to our staff about changing the way we deal with some of their data, and I had a chance to talk to Pat a little bit afterwards, and I just wanted to confirm that, you know, we've not been receiving the SHPO data. The SHPO is looking at maybe having us look at some more, but I don't want to having us start putting all this stuff back out there in the web, and I want to make sure that we got that all under control again, because it kind of opened it up in the work session like they asked us to do it, and I was not aware of that. So did I miss anything, Pat? Where are we at as we speak today?
Well, we're getting different information. When the applications are coming in, some of the applicants are providing the entire class three report and recommendations that they would file with SHPO. And what's supposed to happen when it comes here, and it's supposed to be a separate appendix, and that does not get attached for public view on the website.
And that's the decision we came to a while back when Steve first approached us in legal, that we did not want this information. So that was the red flag when we don't want this stuff because the SHPO doesn't want us to have it.
Correct. They don't want it to be on the public, in the public view because of the sensitive sites.
But I thought we've always operated under the belief that everything we have is public.
It is.
So distinguish that. I think that's where we're confused.
I think they have their own statutes protecting it, don't they?
Well, if it's here and it's not on, it doesn't need to, doesn't have to be on the web. It's available to somebody that from the public that comes up and wants to look at the case file up here. It's available to the public that way, but it's not.
But see, that's where I'm not informed correctly. The last I thought we had was a discussion that they don't want us to have any of that data, that they would all go to them, and if we needed it, we would talk to them. And so we did not have people coming in here and getting data that couldn't be protected. And that was probably a year and a half, 2 years ago that we went through all that.
It was.
So why are we, what has changed?
There's no change. There hasn't been a change since then. It's just that we're getting all kinds of different things.
Well, we don't want that stuff, so we've got to talk to those companies and tell them not to give it to us.
Unless you're telling, are you saying, Alana, that their statute's protecting that, protect it wherever it is, even if it's here?
Any statute would apply wherever it is, even if it's here. For example, there's probably some Social Security number protection statute, not in our law, that we have to follow.
Then why did we go through that before making such a big deal out of it?
I think there's a middle ground, and I'm not 100% sure, but there's probably a middle ground. We have our own middle grounds where it's not protected necessarily, but we don't put it on the web. It's public if someone asks for it. We have certain things like ingrain in other divisions besides siting. It's docketed. It's not protected that way, but it isn't broadcast on the web because that's not a requirement. to the
world.
So
if we don't broadcast it, which obviously we wouldn't, and it's protected by the SHPO laws when it's here, then why are we worried about this?
Well, I just wanted to clarify because I understood the last time we had this discussion that I remember called with the three of us was that they did not want us to have, they being the SHPO, did not want us to have anything. And that's the last I understood. That was the policy they wanted, so we were following through on that. Now, if I was incorrectly informed then, that's fine. But just want to make sure that the public does not have access to SHPO documents unless they talk to the SHPO and they agree. If that's the case, then we're fine. If that's not, then we got to change some. My opinion.
Can't be here then.
It can be here. You can work out a way for them to, let's say someone wants map.
Why don't we call the SHPO up and see what's going on here?
Yeah, and but you can say, ask the SHPO for that map. Or you can get the SHPO's permission to give it to them.
But well, I don't think the main thing is, if we have it, we can say we can say we're not giving you this. We have
if it's
that.
Protected, and the reason why exactly if it's protected.
If the SHPO information that we store is not available to the public under the SHPO laws, then we can protect it. Then that's enough. We just say to the people, sorry, you can't get that from us. Maybe you can talk to SHPO and get it. But we don't, it's not our information. We have it. It's protected by SHPO. And can't we? I mean,
we can if the statute is written that way. I don't know the different categories. I remember the SHPO wanting, they had a process they used to give it out. They might have a law and a rule that spells it out. And they wanted people using that process. But I think maybe we just need more information because I was hearing that the problem is how the companies file it. Is that part of the problem? What we're getting from companies?
I have a different question.
Okay.
What would the commission like to have that information for the siting process?
We've already went, my opinion, we went through that we want the SHPO concurrence letter. I don't want to know where every burial ground is at in the state. I don't want to know where, because if I know, then it's public information. I think that's the point we were at before.
All you're really looking for is the SHPO letter.
That's speaking for me, yes.
Yeah, but I expect that the staff are looking at some of this stuff. So I would ask the question back to you, Pat, is this valuable for the staff to have? We're not going to be looking through all of that SHPO, all of those documents. But, you know, that's part of the application review process. And if that's something you guys want access to, then we should have it. If it's not a value or if it's not feasible for us to get through it, then we can make it even more easy. We don't need it.
Right.
But I think that's a better question for
I'm thinking the only time
guys.
That staff would need it, it would be if at some point in time you wanted the third-party construction inspector to confirm that the company, the construction company, is doing what the company said they would do at those sites, like some buffer zone or whatever. If you want the third-party construction inspector to confirm those things, we would need to have that information.
Wouldn't that be spelled out in the – I mean, wouldn't the SHPO be spelling that out in a letter that – you know, here's what needs to be, here's the areas of concern that need to be handled.
What typically happens is the archaeologist is out there doing the survey, the class 3 on the ground field survey, and they record the sites and they record anything new that they find, and then they make a recommendation on how to mitigate that area, and that's the class 3 report. That report goes to the SHPO. And the SHPO says, we've reviewed your report. Everything, if you build it the way you said you were going to build it and you provide the buffers that you said you were going to provide, then we don't think you're going to impact any archaeological or historical sites.
Mm. All right. Well, that's probably a question we need to think about more in terms of whether we want – I'd have to think about when the construction inspectors would – realistically be able to confirm that kind of information, and if that's another separate requirement we add, I haven't thought through that.
What prompted this, Pat? This what prompted this back again now? But you guys, Jerry brought it up in the hearing like there was a change. So what has changed now that wasn't going on 6 months ago?
Nothing.
Okay, so he just happened to bring it back up, which then caused the red flags because I thought we weren't touching this stuff at all. So to Julie's point, we can even think about it, but can you circle back around with the SHPO and just see what their understanding is of what we're doing with their documents?
Yeah, I already have. I already have.
So what is their understanding of what we are doing with their documents?
If we get any of the information that they think is sensitive, we are supposed to keep it from the website.
Okay.
Keep from broadcasting it public out on the net.
But do they...
That's their big concern.
Are they aware, or am I wrong... You know, if someone wants to be a grave robber and there's a list of graves on there, that they can come in here and get that list.
They're aware of that. Yeah, that's.
And would that be possible over at SHPO? If they show up, does SHPO have to give that information out, or is it secure over there?
I'm not sure.
Who did you
seem to me like we should have?
I have. Here's what the SHPO. When somebody comes in and wants to look at the information, the SHPO makes them sign this statement, sign on in this statement, and I'll read it to you. It says, I understand that cultural resource sites are fragile, non-renewable resources, and that indiscriminate disclosure or publication of such data herein requested may result in unnecessary damage to the resources. I further understand that information regarding cultural resource sites is being provided only for my use in planning a project, evaluating impacts to resources, and or conducting research. I hereby agree not to release to any public, printed, audiovisual, or social media, including environmental assessments, impact statements, etc., any site-specific location data provided by the SHPO without the written permission of the director. Anybody that comes in looking for that information has to sign this.
For them.
For them.
But not for us.
That's for them. Yep. And so they're planning a somebody's planning a project. They come in. They sign this. They say that they won't provide it to any place that would release it to public, printed, and I think that's where they come in with the web, too. It's out there being published out to the public. If we attach it to the web,
we're going around in circles. And we could go here for days. If we have access to the information, we don't have them sign that. Can you go back to the SHPO and confirm somebody with a name that they're okay with what we're doing here? And if that's the case, who did you talk to?
Susan Quinnell.
Did she give you some piece of paper that says that?
Let's see.
If she did, then I'm done talking here.
Well, I might not have a paper that says that specifically, but I can get one.
Get a piece of paper that says that, then we file it away somewhere, and then call good.
Sure. All right.
Or if...
We file it in the desk manual.
Yes.
Double writing.
Okay. Or if it were legal, I don't know if it is. This is part kind of a question, too. It would be even nicer if they said, no, you can't. You can only share it with... commission staff and with paid third-party inspectors. And then we'd know we can't.
You'll see where they have some basis for that, and we'll see if it extends to us.
All right. So,
report back in 1 month, Patrick. January meeting.
Okay. Number two, PSC versus Quest Corporation complaint. Randy.
Well, so we've had some issues going on over quite a long time. We've had, I think, more than one, but at least one work session specifically on some of these primary rural issues where they're the provider in rural areas. And it was discussed at our last regular commission meeting. And so I have a motion here if we're ready. Just regarding getting staff some legal advice on bringing on a complaint. So just, if there's any discussion.
Just out of curiosity, why wasn't this on our regular agenda? Or their admin consent?
I thought it was when I saw the list of them, so.
Well, I was asked in a discussion with Commissioner Chrisman to put it on discussion to be sure people understood payment, the payment of the fees for the outside counsel.
Okay.
Yeah, so if a case comes, presumably we would need advisory counsel as well. And Jack really, I think, has no experience in this area. And so I'm assuming that Alana would be our advisory staff. And so if we retain outside counsel, there's a cost associated with it. There's a valuation fund, which I guess I didn't have really a lot. I'd heard of it, but not a lot of familiarity in my not quite 3 years here. And essentially, it's an I don't know if an assessment is the right word on the company who has to pay this.
Just Quest?
Yes. I guess I wanted to discuss, before we go ahead and approve a motion to retain advisory staff counsel, the thought of, so what happens if we take this step and advisory staff meets with counsel and says, there's just nothing here. You got no case. And that's the end of it. Is that something that we would expect Quest to pay out of the
the
valuation fund? Or is that something that we would expect to absorb?
They pay for it out of their fund, anything.
What's the purpose of the fund?
The valuation fund is the way that over history, until the advent of fees for rate cases, which is fairly recent, the valuation fund was a way of assessing or charging the company involved in a utility case. So if you had a rate case, you'd build the company.
Cover costs of any utility case?
Out-of-pocket costs of utility cases. It used to be rate cases, et cetera. So then we started to have fees for those kinds of cases to use that in the same way, out-of-pocket costs. Telecom preserved the valuation fund for telecom issues, and we still use it today, but I don't think we have a lot of costs. But I think if you have a notice or something, Pat can confirm, or some universal service issue or something, or a notice of an eligible carrier designation or something, I think you're billing the companies for that. So it's the companies involved in the case. Happens to be one telephone company involved in a potential complaint case. So you'd bill one company.
Right.
If you had three, you'd bill three companies.
Is there language that describes what this fund is to be used for specifically?
Yes, I'll get it, it's in 4921.
And so I had almost forgotten, but in my conversation and leading up to this, because this is something that we haven't dealt with, a telecom complaint case, discussing it with Alana, this was just something that I wanted to make sure that both of you were aware of and thinking through. Yep. If nothing developed out of this, there could be some billing to the company over what would have turned out to be nothing, and so there could be some feedback on that. And I wanted to make sure everyone's aware of the direction we're heading here with retaining counsel.
I will have an opinion after I can read the language.
I'll give you my. I mean, we did some of these when it was Kevin, Tony, and I with these, and I'm absolutely in favor of it. That it's way too early to say we're not going to have something. I think this is one we're going to flush all the way out because their service is just ridiculously poor right now.
Yeah, and I don't mean to imply that I think we're not going to have something, but it is a possibility. And
it says right here in the law that this is to employ and fix the compensation of experts, engineers, auditors, attorneys, and other such assistants for complaints, investigations, and other proceedings relating to telecom companies. So I think it's clear in law that this covers that. And so if there isn't a complaint, it's going to be a pretty small amount. So I'm comfortable with that as well.
Okay. Well, then, if you're ready for a motion, I move the commission retain Mitchell D. Armstrong and Brian Schmidt, effective October 15, 2015, to provide legal services to assist the commission as advocacy staff counsel in Public Service Commission versus Quest Corporation, complaint case number PU-15-677.
Second.
Nothing really further to add.
Okay. There is no update on anything?
No.
Okay. All right.
Can we have a motion and a second? Is there any further discussion? Since seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. So that concludes number two. I added number three being the
BK1,
which, yeah.
I'm indifferent to whatever we decide.
So I have the and I did talk to staff about this ahead of time, so I don't know where my comments went. But anyway, it was I think that I like the bill language number four, the current bill, adding at the bottom of the bill, in the bill message line, the current bill reflects the elimination of the 0.326 delivery charge per decatherm effective 12/1/15 as authorized by the NDPSC. That's good. And it says, though, bill message used alone or with three options, with other three options. I think this becomes really good if you put an asterisk in front of it and go up to number two and put an asterisk in front of that or after it or someplace on that line where it shows, you know, delivery charged zero. So that triggers the customers say, zero. Oh, there's an asterisk. I wonder why that is. Oh, they eliminated that charge. That, to me, ties the whole message together. So I think we should have both of those. And I don't know how long that exists, if it's one or two or three billing cycles. I'm not sure, but.
Well, I will weigh in. I had discussion with staff, and I like what you just said. I'm fine with that. But what is more important to me is that this, in my initial discussion with staff, it revolved around for a month. I find that unacceptable. Especially right now, you know, so someone gets their bill in a couple weeks and, you know, we had, 70 degrees over the weekend, you know, your gas bill isn't much. Who's going to pay much attention to it? This needs to be on. I'm not saying it has to be 4 months or 6 months. It has to be on into a good part of the winter for, I think, people to have the opportunity.
So but what do you want so we can be clear,
yeah,
though?
To
realize.
Them.
Tell them what you want.
I'm fine with four too. Four billings. Because
four seems good. A quarter.
They have not everybody gets their bill the same day. I believe I remember. So if everybody gets it four billings, I would find that acceptable.
Right, I'm fine with that, too.
I don't know exactly how to clean up this motion because Jerry's not here right now, so I'll look over at Victor. I happen to be sitting there.
Well, yeah, and this is curious to me because it doesn't even refer to this in the motion.
Well, and that's
all
the part that
I... refers to is the memo.
Well, then
I think that was intentional so that the motion, so that you could have your discussion, give your direction, and that would be that.
Okay.
And the motion works. So, you know, you held up the motion to decide if you were going to approve things. But now you can be comfortable of approving them with this direction.
And so the motion doesn't need to specify on this. Our discussion specifies.
That's Jerry's theory. He wrote it, and that's what I recall him telling me.
Okay.
I'm looking over at Tammy. Do you concur as a interested party? You can do what we said without? Okay. Okay. All righty then.
We'll forward the motion.
If that's okay with all of you. So yep. We're clear, so you... got yours and you got yours. Tammy, you know what they want? Vic, do you know what they want to tell Jerry? Okay. Let's see here. I move the commission approve the tariff filed November 9th, 2015 to comply with the commission's November 4th, 2015 finding of fact, conclusion of law and order in Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources Group, Inc., natural gas service rate increase, application case number PU-15-90.
Second.
I have nothing further to add.
I will add that, maybe in a way, now we add another thing onto the billing and create more confusion. But I think in this case it's adding clarification. But in the long run, I think this is a good move to be eliminating that distribution delivery charge. I think it provides for a more clear and understandable billing for the customers. So once they've had a chance to understand what we did here through this action, I think going forward from March or February, whenever 4 months takes us to, I think it will have been a very good exercise here.
I agree, and I appreciate the company being willing to include this on the billing.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Gosh, the weather.
It said 60 mile an hour wind this morning.
Wow, I didn't know that. Okay, so we're done with discussion items. We'll move down to scheduling. There's only one item on there, maybe two.
Two.
We're going to do the hearing. Okay, so the first item is a work session. Highland Crude, Alexander Tank Farm Crude Oil. This is the one. Okay, so we may or may not. Let's just talk about it. This is the hearing that we had with an ALJ. It's a 5 mile pipeline.
4.5 mile.
Okay, down by Alexander. It's already in the ground, so they were converting it, and the ALJ had the hearing. And Sarah, and we weren't there, so I didn't know if you guys want to do a work session on it or if you want to just review the application, look at the draft order and go from there.
That'd be my preference, to look at the draft. And part of the reason I think we gave it to an ALJ is it didn't look too complicated from our first initial review, and so unless something came up, I think I'll probably be fine with the ALJ's recommendation.
Randy?
I don't know if I'd always feel that way, but this application seemed so clear. If the order seems as clear and we don't, through that process, hear of anything that came up at the hearing unexpectedly, I would be fine with just moving forward based on an order.
What does the ALJ do in this case? Because the company drafts the order. Does the ALJ finish it? Or
absolutely. They'll have an order that they'll submit to us that'll say accept or reject with all the provisions just like we do, and we can either accept it as is or modify it. So they'll give us a full order that they'll have tweaked from what they were given.
Do they provide a recommendation?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
Usually our motions are either to accept or reject it, and we wouldn't normally reject it. We'd accept it with changes or something if we did that.
But Jack will be going over it. And
absolutely. Yeah.
The ALJ proposed order was filed on the 13th.
So okay. We can look through that.
Correct.
Okay, very good. So we don't need a work session. We'll look through that. Sarah, you and I should talk and probably look at getting this on the agenda for... Have our attorneys looked at the ALJ proposed order?
I will double-check with Jack.
Okay, yeah. For the next commission meeting.
Okay.
All right. That was easy. Number two. Now, can we set a hearing for this?
Absolutely.
Already without having talked to judges and looked at schedules? And I mean, there's a lot of people that need to participate in a hearing.
We don't have an ALJ or counsel assigned yet for advocacy. I don't know procedurally if we can do that. I
mean, well, what we could do, though, is we could pick the dates that we think work for us, and you could get that shopped around quickly, and then we could either add it to next week's agenda or have a special meeting to do it. But I think for us to pick some dates that would work for us.
Remind me what the subject is.
This is for item BK3. That BK2 that we've talked about, perhaps a informal is fine.
Okay.
And BK3 is the generation rider, just having a hearing on it. So what we'll have to do, too, is let Vic have some time. But today's motion suspended the tariff and accessed the filing fee of $10,000. We maybe have to go back and look at a different filing fee if they need experts involved in there. So... I think we should just throw some dates out there and then turn Vic back.
Well, and we might need a sense of time, too. How long do you guys need?
I think by the time the notice period comes around for this, 30, 45 days will be good. I've already sent, for this one, I'll be sending off data requests today. I've sent off data requests for the other one, for the generation rider, so.
Okay, so we'll look in January.
First week is toast.
Yep.
11-14 are open for me.
Yeah.
Actually, the 13th is open too, except for one conflict, but we can work around that.
Well, we have that meeting with the North Dakota Petroleum.
Right.
The 14th works for me.
Yeah, 14th would be better, I think.
Can you shop that around, Vic? And
14th?
Man, then after that, it doesn't look pretty for a while, does it?
14th.
The last week of January, I've kind of open.
That's because I'm down at Southwest Power Pool all week and then Kemper.
Okay, that's right.
Let's look at February then, too. You back on the 1st?
Yes. By all means, I get back the 30th.
So the 1st, that first week actually looks pretty open.
Don't forget February 2nd and 3rd is the Call Before You Dig seminar up in Minot now.
Oh, okay. So those are dates are out. The 1st, 4th, and 5th are all open for me.
Same.
The 6th is Ronald Reagan's birthday, but that's a Saturday, so I guess it's okay anyway.
I'm open all those
days. 4th and 5th, why don't you throw those on there,
4th and 5th, okay.
February.
Those work for you, Roger?
4th and 5th.
1, 4, 5.
Okay, so that gives you 4 dates. If those don't work, we can go back and look for
some. What was the January one we chose?
14th. I'll see what I can find with the ALJs and attorneys and stuff.
Okay, very good.
Should be a good start.
Anything? That's it for scheduling? Seriously?
Want to do a work session for the MDU at 15703?
No? Which one is that?
You mentioned that at the MDU tariff.
Well, we just took care of that.
Yeah.
In the discussion.
All right.
That one could end up being an informal.
No. Yeah. That's 15. Is that 15704 or 703?
704 is what we were just talking about formal.
But I had
703 is probably going to be an informal.
Yes, unless someone requests it.
Oh, yeah.
Right, right.
Renewable.
So.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Then that concludes our scheduling matters, and that concludes our agenda, unless somebody has anything else to talk about. This meeting is adjourned.